Well, welcome and good evening to everybody. Just want to thank you for coming out. My name is Nina Morgan, and I am a member here of Emmanuel Baptist Church. So on behalf of our church, we just want to welcome you. So we thank you for coming out tonight. I believe God will do some neat things. He's done some great things already today. Well, our first speaker tonight is Nicole Bromley, and she is an international speaker and author. She's the founder and director of One Voice Enterprises, and she's a national spokesperson on the issue of sexual abuse and human trafficking. Nicole has been a guest expert on numerous television shows such as Inside Edition, The Montel Williams Show, The 700 Club, and Life Today. Her books, Hush and Breathe, have ministered to thousands and have been a catalyst in breaking the silence. Last spring, she began a campaign across East Africa to stamp out child sexual abuse and trafficking. And we are very happy and privileged to have her with us today. So will you join me in welcoming Nicole Bromley?
Well, I appreciate you all coming out tonight. It's really cool to see a community that wants to be a part of change and wants to be better equipped to help those that might be silently hurting in their community. So thank you so much for coming out. And, I'm not sure, in small towns, a lot of times people grew up here and they kind of stay here. That's kind of where it was, how it was where I grew up. I'm from a small town up in Ohio. Our town was so small that we actually had one street light. I mean, you guys have a small town, but you're like a big city compared to where I came from. We had one store. We had more cows than people. Literally, population-wise. I don't know your background, your dreams, your fears, your values, what your parents looked like, your family, culture, structure, all those things. We could be the two most different people in the world. But the issue that I am here to present, that my mom is here to present, the thing that we have come to this community to share with you really spans across all boundaries, all borders, undermines all relationships, and speaks in the universal language of human emotion. So as we share our story with you tonight, I think you'll discover, that we aren't so different after all. I want to begin by having you imagine a 12-year-old girl with long brown hair, hazel eyes, and a big heart encircling the name Zach Morris on her left hand. Every day after school, this girl would run up the gravel driveway to her house. She would throw a lunchbox on the table, and she would go to the freezer to get a big bowl of ice cream. She would take that bowl of ice cream to her bedroom to watch TV. She would sit on her hot pink beanbag in her room on the red carpet there. I remember her walls were painted pink, and they were covered in posters of ballerinas, basketball players, and the new kids on the block. Every day she would go to her desk, finish her homework, and then she was off to practice for one of the three sports that she played. And on the weekend, she would attend her local church youth group meeting. So as she grew up, this girl, she involved herself in her activities, spent time with her friends, did her homework, played many extracurricular activities, sports. So in many ways, she was like the poster child of her small community. A straight-A student. She was captain of three varsity sports. She was homecoming queen of her school. A perfect girl, a perfect family, a perfect life. At home, things seemed just as perfect. She lived with her mom and her stepfather. Her stepfather was self-employed. They spent a lot of time doing father-daughter activities. Her mom worked at home. They were very close. She also had a stepsister who was exactly 5 months and 5 days younger than her, and they were best friends. So you can see this picture that I'm painting. Everything looked really good on the outside. Now I want you to imagine that same little girl wishing that she were someone else. Imagine her planning how to run away from home. Imagine her planning her own funeral. The same girl who had the perfect life, perfect family, and the perfect neighborhood, who was not afraid of strangers, not afraid of spiders, was afraid to come home each and every day. She often had horrible nightmares. She often woke up crying. Why the nightmares? Why the crying? She cried because she was miserable, and she was miserable because she had a secret. I was miserable. I was the girl who came to school every day with the biggest smile on her face, but I was the same girl who was afraid inside. I had a secret. I wasn't sure why I had to keep it. Now, I do know that I will never forget the summer of 1994. I was 14 years old. I was looking forward to my freshman year of high school, and I've already told you that we lived way out in the country and we had lots of cows. Well, we didn't have cows in our family. Part of our family didn't concern cows. But we had lots and lots of land and fields of grass. And as I shared with the girls earlier at the school, you're going to think I'm a big hillbilly right now, but that's okay. When I was young, like maybe 8, 9, 10, I don't remember, Mom, but my stepdad bought this huge mama tractor, okay? And he taught me how to drive this sucker when I was like 10 years old. And it was my job on the weekends to go out and do the mowing of our fields. And so I remember one day, it was really nice outside. I decided I was going to, you know, get a nice tan as I did my weekend chores of mowing on my big tractor. I was out there maybe 10 minutes or so when I saw my stepdad coming toward me with a glass of lemonade. So I stopped my tractor and waited for my stepdad to reach me. And I remember that I drank the entire glass and I thanked him. And the next thing that I'm going to tell you might seem weird, or it might not seem weird to you at all, but I can tell you that I will never forget it. My stepdad was staring at my chest, and I remember it got really uncomfortable. I gave him the glass back right away, and then he made a dirty comment that was totally off the wall and disgusting. And I remember I was really angry, and so I just took off and I started driving, and he didn't seem to understand why I was so mad. About an hour later, he came back out, offered me another drink. I said I didn't want anything. Then just a few minutes later, I looked up and I saw my stepfather standing on our front porch, staring at me with binoculars. I remember I started crying and I tried to drive where there were trees so that he couldn't see me, but he didn't put the binoculars down. He kept following me with them wherever I was driving. I remember I was so angry, I wanted to end my life right then and there. So I put my tractor into the highest gear and I started driving towards this huge tree at the end of the field. I wanted to end my life in his torment. I remember at the very last second I swerved, and obviously my life didn't end that day, but neither did the torment. It was supposed to be the happiest summer of my life, or one of them. We were going on this dream vacation to the Bahamas, my mom, my stepdad, my stepsister, and I, and I remember my stepdad had been acting very bizarre the entire trip. Even my mom noticed it. It was just he and I swimming in the ocean. And as I came back to the beach where my mom was laying, she kept asking me what was wrong. But as always, I said I would just tell her later. That night, I remember brushing my teeth in her hotel room, and my stepfather came out of the bathroom. Now, I'm not sure, you know, really what you all call them around here, but I've been to a lot of places. In Texas, they said skivvies. In Tennessee, they say draws. I don't know. Where I'm from in Ohio, they say tighty-whities. I was sharing with the girls earlier today, there was a kid in one of the audiences where I was speaking a few years ago, and some random guy yelled out, "Cookie covers." I don't know. Weird, right? Yeah. Awkward. Awkward silence. Yeah. Anyway, that was all my stepdad was wearing, which was disgusting to begin with. What was totally wrong was the way that he touched me that night. And I know that for some of you, these two incidents in and of themselves might not seem like a big deal, but to you, they might not, because of what sexual abuse means in our communities. But to me, it was a turning point in my life, marking a beginning and an end. So how did these events bring an end to my journey? Well, it was about a week or so after returning home from our family vacation. My mom and I were in the car. We were going to pick up my stepsister to bring her home with us for the weekend. Our conversation started off as it normally did, about each other's day, and all of a sudden, it was silent. I remember the traffic light turned red and the car stopped. As we sat there waiting for the light to turn green, I kept imagining what it would be like to tell my mom about the things my stepfather had been saying and doing to me for so many years. She was the first to break the silence. She told me about her desire to go back to college. She had talked to my stepdad about this. He became very angry and violent, acting in ways he never really had before. It was then that she turned to me and said, "Has he done anything strange around you?" I was unsure as to whether or not it was really wrong. No one ever talked about these kinds of things. I was unsure as to whether or not it was really my fault. But I knew that if I were ever going to tell my mom, that this was the time. I remember the traffic light turned green. My mom hit the accelerator. We were late. It was warm outside. I started sweating. My stomach was tied up in knots. And all of a sudden, I told her. My mom slammed on the brakes and pulled the car over to the side of the road. And for the first time in my life, I knew that it was wrong. Then she asked me if he had ever touched me. All these memories started flooding back in my mind that I had really kind of pushed away for so long. Did he ever touch me? That question brought with it a memory of our summer vacation just 2 years earlier before I entered junior high. It was another scene on the beach, another scene in the water, just like the summer of 94, another family vacation I wanted to forget. A memory of him grabbing me, holding me in the water while he touched me under my bathing suit. I remember his words. Do you want to go up to the hotel room with me? I said, no, I want to swim. He said, we don't have to tell anyone. Just come on. I said, no, I want to go lay in the sand. He said, we'll keep it our little secret. I pulled away from him that day. He punished me by not speaking to me for the rest of the day. Did he ever touch me? I remember the same vacation, the same night. He needed to get some things out of our van. He needed my help. I went with him. I had no idea what was in store for me. He told me to hop in the back seat and look for the cooler. He hopped in the back seat, too. He said, sit up straight and don't move around. Then it happened again. I remember feeling very scared, as usual. But also, as usual, he said that I was very special. He told me that if I loved him, I would let him. Well, did he ever touch me? I may not have known the answer to the question that my mom posed to me in the car that day, but as I saw her reaction to the few stories I had been telling her, the answer was obvious. You know, I was a victim of childhood sexual abuse. And it's interesting that, you know, we can hear stories about this in the news so much, you know. But when we think about it hitting our own community, our own family, our own church, our own school, it seems like an obscure crime because so often kept a secret in our society. You know, the fact is that over 1 million children under the age of 18 are currently being sexually abused by a family member in the United States. It's estimated that there's 39 million survivors living among us in America right now. Over 100,000 U.S. children are forcefully engaged in prostitution and pornography every single year. And every minute, there are 2 children that are sold into sex slavery. These numbers are real. Maybe some of you are still thinking, you know, this doesn't really apply to me. You picture stuff like this happening only to poor city girls living in immoral families with bad parents and no friends. You're right. It happens there, but it also happens in every other type of home and every other type of family. Sexual abuse cuts across all boundaries, male, female, Christian, non-Christian, black, white, rich, poor. 1 in every 3 girls, 1 in every 6 boys are sexually abused by the time they turn 18. You know, those kids have names. Those kids have faces. Look at me. I'm a statistic. Now, I hate statistics. I'm here today because I was that 1 in 3 girls. I'm here today because of my little secret. Did he ever touch me? My mom got really quiet. She was holding back the tears, and we were now pulling in the driveway to pick up my stepsister. And she was already outside waiting for us. So my mom quickly said she didn't know what we were going to do, but not to worry, she was going to figure it out and take care of it. That was Friday night. We left our home the following Monday. I remember that night being so frightened and scared, but praying with my mom and believing together that however things turned out, it would be the best for everyone involved. She reported the abuse to Children's Services. They interviewed us, and then later they interviewed my stepfather, and he had denied everything. We were to go to court in a month, the very first day of my freshman year of high school. This didn't seem like the answer to our prayer at the time. The days that followed were the most frightening days of my life. I knew that if my stepdad found us, he was going to take our lives. It seemed like the phone rang off the hook everywhere we tried to hide. And probably the most frightening day of my life occurred on the Thursday of that week. I remember it was so nice outside, and I was tired of being cooped up in all of these homes of our friends and family, hiding from my stepdad. And so we were staying at my grandmother's at the time, and I told my mom and grandma it would be nice if we could go for a walk around the block. And so as we were walking down the street, I looked up and I saw my stepdad's big blue van driving towards us on the street. And so I yelled at my mom and grandma to run because it was him, which my grandma running. I mean, I know some of you old ladies here have got some sprint in you, but my grandma, she'll beat you all. She had a good run in her that night. But anyway, we sprinted for the library that was just around the corner, and my mom was right. There is no question that God was protecting us. I do not know how he didn't see us, but he didn't. And we got to the library safely and eventually got back to my grandmother's house safely, too. Well, then the next Tuesday, we went to visit some friends, and we stayed at their home. Their father of the family, took me and his three children to the store. And as we returned to their house, I saw a police car leaving the driveway. So it was weird because he passed the driveway, took us around the corner to their grandparents' house, and left us there. So I ended up walking back through the fields by myself to see what my mom was doing and why the police had been there. I knew something was wrong as soon as I walked through that door. I remember my mom was very quiet. She was sitting at the dining room table. And I said, "What's wrong, Mom? Why were the police here?" She said, "He shot himself." I said, "He's dead." She said, "Yeah." I remember running around that house just screaming, "I hate him. I hate him. I hate him." You know, I was so furious that he would never face justice here on earth for all that he had done to me. Nearly 10 years of my childhood taken away, and he took the easy way out. And you know, even though I would no longer face sexual abuse, that's where I was left. I felt like I was left alone. I felt dirty. I felt damaged. I felt used. I felt like everything was my fault, and I was afraid of what people would think about me if they knew the truth. And so it was then, at 14 years old, that I vowed I was never going to tell my secret again. I wanted to just bury it, to block it out, and try to move on with my life. But over time, I realized that it wasn't that easy. At the same time, as a 14-year-old girl, and seeing just the faith and perseverance of my mom just to do the right thing, to believe me, to stand by me no matter what, was an incredible example to me. I remember clinging with my mom to the promises. Romans 8:28 says that we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him. And also just really encouraged through my high school years by the words that God spoke to the prophet Jeremiah. It says, "For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." And I really believe that was going to be true in my life as well. Felt like it was the end of my journey. I was finally set free from this life of abuse. But it was also the beginning of my journey. You know, I became a high school freshman. My mom became a college freshman. Things started looking better. At the same time, still really hard. You know, I separated from my stepsister. I've only seen her a handful of times since. Cut off from that family. Kids at school started calling me daddy's girl. I mean, how hard was that? The nightmares, the flashbacks. And to this day, I still cannot remember exactly how it all started. But one thing that I do remember is when I was in fifth grade, there was a lady from the sheriff's department that came to our school and showed us a video about childhood sexual abuse. And I remember sitting on the library floor with all of my little fifth grade friends and my boyfriend Chucky. And I remember thinking to myself, this really seems a lot like what's happening to me. You know, but I wasn't sure. You know, to me, it was just hard for me to really grasp something like that, something so horrible as that could be happening in a family like mine, or by someone as good as my stepfather was seen as in our family, or in our community. You know, I've been speaking out about this issue for a number of years now, and I've realized that sometimes people, even communities, place part of the blame on a victim for allowing abuse or maybe an unhealthy relationship, marriage, dating, whatever, to continue over a long stretch of time. So many times people place part of the blame on them. Even for being silent for many years. But what they don't realize is an abuser seeks control and knows exactly how to silence you. You know, abusers are very good at what they do and use many tactics to silence or control people. An abuser convinces the victim that it's their fault. Do you remember the pink bedroom with the red carpet? Well, it was right across the hallway from the bathroom in our home. So after a shower, I would wrap up in a towel, run 3 feet across the hallway, be in my bedroom closet, drying off, looking for something to wear, and I would turn around and my stepdad would be in my room. And I would always say, "What are you doing in here? Get out of my room." And he would say things like, "My door wasn't locked," or "It wasn't latched properly," or "I ran across the hall wearing a towel." This was somehow a sign to him that I wanted him to come in. And I know that it sounds crazy to many of you, but as a little girl, hearing something like this from your stepdad who you love and trust, who your entire community loves and trusts, time after time after time after time after time, I began to believe that he was right. You know, maybe I had somehow asked for this or deserved it. Of course, the reality is that a child cannot ask for abuse and, unfortunately, cannot stop it from occurring. 90% of victims know their abuser. More than half of abusers are actually related to the child that they choose to abuse. My stepdad always told me that he wanted us to be really close. He said he wanted it to be our little secret. He told me it was his responsibility to teach me things about my body and that all good dads do that for their special daughters. I remember growing up as a little girl and thinking it was weird at times. But then, just immediately, my mind would flip. I knew he loved me and would never mean to hurt me. After all, he wants to be closer to me than my real dad. And no one ever talked about sexual abuse. I didn't know what it was. My stepdad said it was normal. I loved and trusted him. I had no reason not to. An abuser will give the victim no choice. Even when I thought what he was doing to me was wrong, I remember there were times when he would threaten to kill my dog if I ever told anyone. He said my mom would get really jealous of our relationship if she knew any more than she did, and I would never see her again. I would have to live with another family. He said no one would ever believe me because I was just a little girl, and he was a very popular man in our town. He made me believe I had no choice. He made me believe I had no voice, and he made me believe there was no way out. But I am here today because I know that there is a way out. You know, after an entire childhood of manipulation, control, horrible experiences over the span of nearly 10 years of my childhood, I can honestly stand here at 30 years old and tell you, I know I look like I'm 15 or 19 or whatever you guys are thinking in your head right now, but at 30 years old, and I can tell you that I do know that there is freedom, that there is healing, that there is hope beyond sexual abuse. And I have found freedom and healing by the grace of God. You know, I am a work in progress. I believe that healing is a lifelong journey. But I believe that telling my secret was the first step to healing. And I believe that so much, that breaking the silence, sharing your secret, is a first step towards healing from any kind of torment and violence in this way. And you know what? I'm also honored to be standing within Emmanuel Baptist Church, where I can also tell you that I believe that true and genuine healing, the kind that sets your heart free, the kind where you can get up in front of people that you've never even seen in your entire life and talk about the hardest thing of your entire life, I believe that that happens through the healing and the grace and the mercy in a relationship with Jesus Christ. And I will tell you that he's the only reason that I can do this. He's the only way that I've found true forgiveness in my life, where I can cut the cord that was attaching me to my abuser all of my life, where it was almost like I was dragging him around with me everywhere I went. It was like my stepfather was affecting every choice I made in college, every relationship, horrible relationship choices I was making in high school and college. It was like I was dragging him around with me everywhere I went, and he was affecting me daily. So I can tell you that it's only been through the freedom that I found in Jesus Christ and the forgiveness that I've been able to offer where I could cut the cord from the person that was traumatizing me even after his death. So now as I navigate through that, through my brokenness and through my own mistakes and my own journey in my life with Jesus, I can tell you as I look back over the span of the past 15 years, I can remember always asking the question, where were you, God? You know, in my lowest, most honest moments, I could say, you know, I felt like God had abandoned me. And I'm wondering if some of you have that same question, you know, why do bad things happen to good people kind of thing. And I'll tell you a story. When I was 15, it was a full year later after I had vowed to never tell my secret again, I was invited to a Christian camp up in Cleveland, Ohio. And at the time, no one in my school, no one in my youth group, not even my best friend Laura, knew my secret. I'd kept my vow of not telling any of my peers about what I'd gone through. And the last day of camp, they had a time of open mic, is what they called it, where you could come up and share something cool that happened that week, or maybe your favorite verse of the Bible or something like that. And somehow I ended up walking up and I shared my story for the first time. And, you know, when you go to camp, you make all these new friends or whatever, you know, pen pals, which I was telling the girls earlier. I know these days it's like, okay, here's my Twitter account, my Facebook, my MySpace, blah, 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 da, da, da. Here you go. Like, message me, friend me, whatever. Back in the day, like, we had to write with pen and paper. You all remember. Stamps. Do you remember those? Some people use them still. Awesome. Yeah, it took like 3 or 4 days to get a message to somebody. Isn't that crazy? Like, right now it's like, my friend, my best friend now, she calls me Thumbs because I'm like a texting queen. I'm like, that's not funny to you. That's like really funny to me. Thumbs? I mean, come on. Come on, that's funny. Man, I know, it's the topic. It's hard. But anyways, back to, what am I talking about? Okay, so at camp, I got home and I started receiving all these letters from other people, kids at the camp, peers, people that look like me, telling me their story for the first time. Many kids, teenagers, who had never told that they'd been sexually abused were thanking me for sharing my story and telling me that they had gone through the same thing. And I'll tell you, up until then, I thought I was the only one. I thought I was alone. Like, this didn't happen to people. This didn't happen to people, especially not anyone like me. And here I was finding out that it was real, that I wasn't alone. And I remember that same week, it's during this time when I was just really battling out with the Lord. Where were you? I felt so left and abandoned. Why did I have to go through this? I remember just crying out to him in the night, and I had picked up my Bible during that week when I started receiving those letters, and I opened it, and I came across a verse that was going to change my life forever. It was 2 Corinthians 1, 3, and 4. It says, "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion, the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our troubles so that we can comfort others in any trouble with that same comfort we ourselves have received from God." I knew it was God that was comforting me. I felt it so deep in my heart and my soul. Every time I tried to belt out a prayer, every time I journaled, every time I read the Bible, any time I listened to worship music in the dark of night when I was just crying and hurting so much, I felt safe. I never felt safe my entire life. And I also saw this verse that I just shared becoming reality in my life. At 15, I was helping other kids. I was writing letters back and forth with other teens who'd gone through the same thing, comforting them with that same comfort that I was receiving, I believe, from God. And it was like the more that God comforted me, it was like the more I wanted to know him. And it was just this continual thing. For so long, it was like I was running away from him with my anger and in my bitterness and throwing back accusations to him. And then once I felt his comfort and once I realized he was there, it was like I needed to go back to him and find out who he was. So I'll tell you that in my personal relationship with Jesus, in that healing journey when I was a teenager, I came to realize that God was with me through it all. You know, he cried when I cried, He was angry when I was angry. Sometimes I just pictured myself as a child just being held and being wept over in the hands of the Lord. And I'll tell you that through all of this, what I have realized is that there is never so much evil in this world that God can't take it and turn it into something good, something beautiful. I just want to push pause on this story for one moment and get real, because I know that some of you here may have felt some of the things that I felt in my life. Maybe some of you have been violated in really intimate ways. And maybe in response to that, like me, you've hurt other people. You know, some of you may know someone who's done this. So many times we run to things like secret addictions to numb this inner pain. You know, alcohol, drugs, porn, eating disorders, cutting, perfectionism, people-pleasing, you know. I've been down those roads. Or maybe you run away from people who really care about you. You know, that people that want to help you because you're afraid of trusting anyone again. That was me at a time, too. Or maybe you just feel like you can't be who you were really called to be, you know. You feel like me, like going to school every day and wearing this mask of who you feel like people would like. Well, in the meantime, you're dying inside. You know, that was me for season two. And I'll tell you that through all of this, again, I realized that no matter the circumstances in our lives, no matter where we've been, no matter what we've done, no matter what has been done to us, that God promises to take our pain and turn it into something good. And I'm telling you that I know that there is healing beyond the stain that's left by sexual abuse. There is healing. Again, it's a lifelong journey, but that there's more to life. I don't have to be defined by what happened to me. I was a victim of sexual abuse. That's not my identity. It happened to me, but it's not who I am. And so I would say that although I know that not all of you have been sexually abused, I do know that I'm not alone in this room. And for those of you who may walk in my shoes, I ask you to help me break the silence surrounding sexual abuse, surrounding rape. Breaking the silence was one of the most courageous things I think I've ever done in my life. Choosing to remove my mask and allow God to guide me through the healing process was definitely the other. If you've ever been sexually violated, I want you to know that you are not alone. 1 in 3 girls and 1 in 6 guys are sexually abused by the time they turn 18. Never believe that sexual abuse or rape happens in some other town, some other community, some other church, some other school, some other home, because I promise you, it happens everywhere. But I hope for a nation of small communities like this that would be willing to address the issue and heal from the pain. You know, that's the mission. That's the goal. That's why my mom and I are here. I believe God's called us here at this very specific time, this very specific place, not only to break down the walls surrounding a sensitive topic that people don't talk about, but also to encourage each of you to carry this message to the next level. This could die today and no one ever be affected, or each of you could carry the torch and let it affect you and every life around you. You know, not sweeping this issue under the rug, not putting our heads in the sand and pretending it doesn't happen here. When we do that, we allow more and more and more kids to be hurt. And we don't want that. That's why you're here, because you don't want that. I want to read something, a few sentences from one of my books called Hush. If no one sheds light on what is being done in the darkness, it will never stop. And survivors of sexual abuse will never know the truth that will set them free from the lies that keep them in bondage. Every time we bring abuse into the light, we help prevent more abuse while we help its victims heal. Victims need their own voice to break free from their silent pain, but they also need your voice. They need my voice. Together, our voices become one voice, one that rings loud and clear as it speaks words of love and truth, of validation and acceptance and comfort. Our voice will penetrate the darkness and expose sexual abuse for exactly what it is. Our voice will lead wounded hearts to a safe, open place of healing, And as we speak out, our voice will reduce the risk of abuse for the next child and the next child and the next. So my challenge to end the first half of our time together is this, is that in order for us to have a day without sexual abuse or rape, in order for us to reach a point of turning victims into victors, we have to be a part of culture change. And what that means is being willing to hear the secrets that are here in our community, even in the places we don't want to hear them from, even from places of high-level authority figures, even people that we love and care about. We need to hear these secrets, and we need to stand up to those who are committing these acts. We need to say this isn't going to happen anymore in our community. And I will tell you that it also begins with those of you here who have held a secret inside for a long time, and you know that it's time to tell your secret to someone that you trust. Breaking the silence could really mean something big in your life starting today. And for those of you who have never faced anything that I've mentioned today, I want you to think about the fact that there's someone in your life who has, and to be that safe place, that person of integrity, of trust, that someone could come to you and share their secret and thus begin their healing journey. Be the one who will take a stand to make a difference in someone else's life. So finally, I know that some of the stories I told you about my past are really hard to hear. And I'm sure as my mom shares a little bit more in a little bit could be hard as well. But I want you to just imagine putting yourself in someone else's shoes, how hard they might be for someone that you really care about to live through. So my question for you to think about before Nina shares about what we're doing next would be this. How many of you are willing to help me put a voice to this voiceless crime that is certainly sweeping across our nation, and I'm most assuredly sweeping across even this community, as it is with most communities? My last question, too, is how many of you would be willing to surrender your own past, no matter what that entails, in order for God to use your life or something better, something bigger? I'm not asking for your sympathy. I'm asking for your strength. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll stick around. Nina was going to share something.
Thank you, Nicole. Great job. Thank you. I guess you guys realize, you know, even after so many years, I'm sure that's a hard thing to do, Nicole. But for the grace of God. Right? So we are going to take just a real quick intermission for you guys to just kind of get up, stretch, move around, and probably take about 5 or 10 minutes. And also during that time, I think we'll go ahead and pass out. We have a list of resources to just get in everyone's hands today. And I just feel like one of the things I need to share about that, as a result of just planning this event, one of the things that we did was started a blog, and the address for that will be on this resource sheet. And we wanted it to be a place that people could email in just, hey, I'm struggling, this is my issue, whatever, confidentially, without anyone knowing who you are. So I would definitely encourage you to do that, or if you know someone that could use that resource for themselves. So anyway, just as that comes around, just remember that that's something that we're trying to do here. And also I know that there's a support group trying to get started here in town as well. So you guys just take a break and then be sure and come back, because I know we all want to hear from Cindy as well.